Our reading for today picks up immediately after last week's reading regarding the miraculous feeding of thousands from a few loaves of bread and fish. Matthew continues the good news this way. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking towards them on the lake. But when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified, saying, "It's a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came towards Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God."
Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Gene. Those are the words that I would normally use to pray at the beginning of my sermon. But after this week and all that has gone on in the world, I needed that prayer. I needed it prayed for us and for me. I have to ask you, friends, why do we come back here every week? Why do we carve off a precious amount of time from our busy weeks to be here in this sanctuary? Away from the world, why do we come here every week to sing, to pray, simply to sit in silence? Week after week, month after month, year after year. When there is so much going on right now that needs our help out there. When this world is in such desperate need of our courage, our love, our strength, and our time, why do we week after week use this precious gift of time to be here in this place? Why do we spend a couple minutes of worship every week reaching out our hearts and hands in peace to people who we know and love, rather than taking that greeting, that risk-taking service out into the world, rather than leaving this very moment and marching on Washington in the name of peace? Why do we sing about a new morning breaking in? When the world seems to be falling apart in our very sight, when cars plow into people who are there to protest bigotry and hatred? Why did we just send out our kids to tend a garden out there, a garden that we have called Little Eden, when the original Eden seems to be crumbling all around us, when the Antarctic shelf is falling apart, coming apart years, if not decades, faster than the most dire of previous predictions, when the world is seemingly on fire in so many ways? Why, pray tell, are we spending our precious time here? Just what do we think we're doing? I know why I'm here. I am here because I am a follower of the way. I am here in this room because this is what Jesus teaches us to do when the going gets tough, to keep our eyes on the prize, to keep our hearts attuned to the tiptoed entrance of God, to stay focused when the storms of the world buffet us all about. This passage this morning, a passage about headwinds and stormy seas, walking on water and sinking in the midst of doubt and fear, so often directs our attention straight to the incredible action of this story. From the first word that Anne read to you, our hearts and minds turn to action and drama. Immediately, Matthew says, the very moment that those 12 baskets of loaves and fishes were collected from the throngs that had been miraculously fed until their bellies were full and their eyes were heavy, immediately, Jesus forced his disciples out and into the boat, and he shooed away the crowd. Immediately. And the moment Jesus finally finds some peace and quiet as the dust of the crowds and the dusk of night settles in around him, our minds again are spirited away to action. The disciples are hunkered down against a raging storm. Their boat, not just bothered by waves, but a better word is tortured by waves. Being led far out from the stability of land, it all happens so fast that we actually miss what is the critical moment of this story and the reason that you and I come back here every week. And if it's not the critical moment, it's at least the critical motive for those who seek to do the work of Christ, to follow in the way of Christ, to be Christ's love in the world as our mission calls us to be. And that moment is Jesus going up the mountain to pray. To pray. In all of the Gospels, prayer is a central part of who Jesus is and how he does his ministry. If you read Luke's Gospel, both during his baptism and that moment of transfiguration up on top of the mountain, it is in the midst of his prayer that the heavens break open. And the voice resonates, "This is my beloved." It is praying that Jesus does before he commissions the disciples. It is praying that he does before he sets out on his own ministry. And I'm sure you know, it is praying that he does in that garden before the events of betrayal, humiliation, and crucifixion. Don't get me wrong, Jesus is not opposed to action. After all, didn't he just feed the thousands who flocked to him? And he didn't just feed them If you remember that story, he said he cured and healed them all of their sicknesses. That is a whole lot of doing. And so to follow the way does require us to do. But there is a time for action and courage and the miraculous, and there must be a time for prayer too. For it is in praying that we lay siege to heaven itself. It is in prayer that we connect to the fount of our every blessing. It is in prayer that we remember who we are, to whom we belong, and why it is that we go out there and care and do in the first place. In this passage of Matthew, the critical moment of the whole story, this moment where Jesus goes up to pray, is often passed by as it is simply some side note to the action-packed story of the day, as if it is just some plot device, just some placeholder to get us to what really matters. But here's what I know. Prayer never played second fiddle in the life of Jesus. And if we are to be people of that way of life, it can't for us either. The events that unfolded this week reminded me of how small we people and this church can seem, and how big the forces are arrayed against us. In Tolkien's epic trilogy, The Lord of the Rings, there is a pivotal moment when the people nearly give up, when they are this close to despair, when it all seems to be crashing down upon themselves, and the king cries out, "What can mere mortals do in the face of such anger and hate?" This week, for the first time in my lifetime, maybe not yours, but in mine, the prospect of the reality of another global war, a possible nuclear war, one that doesn't end with a nuclear bomb, but rather starts with one, seemed to be an actual and real possibility. This week, for the first time in my lifetime, something from the past. White supremacists being bold enough to march openly in the streets of a college town, and not just a college town, but a world-class university town. And not only that, but what happened when the counter-protester gathered and a young man drove his car intentionally into them, killing one of those protesters. I found myself wondering, what can we do in the face of all that? What can we, as this faithful, amazing, beautiful, strong, vibrant church here in Stockbridge, do about any of that? And I think the answer is what the answer always is: for us to double down on being people of the way. Yes, to feed and heal and march and proclaim, but just as importantly, to find the time, to set aside the time, to make the time, to pray, to let go, to simply be here, and let God be here, and here, and here, and here. For that is what Jesus did, and if we are to be people of the way, so too must we. Jesus didn't stop praying even though the disciples were being tossed about. Matthew makes it clear that by the time Jesus started praying, the boat was already being tortured. It was already in the middle of a lake that was known for its ferocious and unpredictable storms. Matthew makes it clear that that hour was dusk. And yet Jesus stayed there praying for hours until Matthew tells us the final watch, that time between 3 and 6 in the morning when darkness holds most strongly before light reemerges. Jesus waited for hours until he got up and calmly went to the disciples. And you know what? If you read this story, it turns out the disciples were doing okay. They were hanging on. They were fishermen after all. It would take more than a bit of wind and wave to get them to lose hope. In fact, the first time fear even enters the equation is the arrival of Jesus himself. For it becomes clear to these fishers of men that Jesus is not just some miracle worker, but the one through whom God is working miracles. He's not just some teacher, but love incarnate, teaching us the way to live. And so, as he draws near, Peter says, "Jesus, if it is you, come on, call me to come out." And sometimes I think we look at Peter and we're so used to beating poor Peter up for all of his mistakes. And we look at this as like, well, I'm not sure if I should get out of the boat. Should I get out of the boat? I'm not sure. So Jesus, tell me and I will. In reality, what Peter is saying is, "Lord, command me. You make sure this is what you want me to do, not just something that I want to do to show off. You call me to come out of this boat, and I will." And he does. Sometimes we see Peter as that foil, but here in this story, he is that person of extraordinary faith. Would you have gotten out of that boat? Don't need to answer. But he gets out, and he defies physics and logic and everything else the world has to share with him. And he walks calmly towards Jesus, keeping his eye on the life-giving, love-giving eyes of Jesus. Make no mistake, the boat is still going up and down. The storm is still raging at his tempest. But Peter calmly gets out, and suddenly the miracles are being done through him. It wasn't until Peter got distracted and noticed everything that was going on in the world that that miracle being done in and through him cracked and began to flounder. And he began to sink. This is a great story. It is the story of perseverance through troubling and tortured times. It is a perfect story for our own troubled and tortured times because we, my friends, are people of the way. Long before people like you and me, the kind of people who show up week after week, no matter what is going on out there, long before we became known as Christians, the people who followed Jesus were simply known as the people of the way. I sometimes wonder how different the dynamics of our church would be if that was still what we were called. The emphasis on the way, the path, on following Christ, on emulating him, on learning from him, on walking in his way, I wonder. In the book of Acts, it tells the story of those people of the way, a people who were grounded in prayer. Oh yes, that story tells us that the needy and the hungry were fed. It tells us that poverty was eliminated among all those who walked in the way, that they shared and they did and they healed. It tells us all about their acts after all the book has been called the Acts of the Apostles. But more importantly, that book defines who those people were as people of prayer. Not over and against action, not in place of sacrificial service in the world, but as partner and companion, as grounding, as guiding star. The book of Acts says that the people prayed constantly. Friends, this week, I don't know about you, but I have been deeply troubled by what is going on in the world. At times, I have to admit that despair has crept up in the midst of the shadow, whispering insidiously, "What can this little church in the middle of the Berkshires do in the face of such dangers, hate, and evil?" There have been moments when I've been tempted to listen to that voice and give in. But that is why I am back here this morning, in the midst of ice shelves crashing into the sea, in the midst of nuclear sable rattling, in the midst of hatred literally on the march. I am here because I'm practicing to be a person on the way. And I know that before I can do anything, before I can even think about getting out of the boat, before any miracles can flow through me, I first have to come here to sing, to share peace, to dwell in the presence of the holy, and to pray. Yes, to pray to the Lord and Father of mankind. I need to let go of everything, let go of my own desires, let go of the worries of the world, and simply listen for our still speaking God, to hear that small voice of calm, claiming me as beloved, and then sending me out there to be the bearer not of my own love, but the love of the holy, to defy physics, wave, and tumult, maybe even walking on water. With my eyes never distracted by headline or tweet or breaking coverage, instead fixed solely on the one I follow, the author of the way, the one who as darkness fell in the midst of need and swirling storms did what was crucial. He went to a holy place, a place like this one, and he prayed. He sought out God for direction, comfort, strength, and courage. And then, after he remembered who he was and to whom he belonged, after his Sabbath rest by Galilee, he went back out into the world to be the balm it so desperately needed. That is our way. That is our path. Come, Christians. No, come, people of the way. There is so much to do. And this is a precious time, a holy time. A time set aside to pray. Amen.